order.
Not on the bill.
No, we're not meeting.
No. Okay. Tonight, representing the Senate resources will be Senator Stedman, Senator Green, myself, Huggins. Senator Wilikowski will be joining us in a few moments, as will Stevens, Wagner. But if I could have Representative Coring represent his members.
Thank you very much, Senator Huggins. I want to thank the Senate Resources Committee for including the House Oil and Gas with this. It's a real honor to be joining you at this important hearing of the AGEA bill. I'd like to introduce the members of my committee. I've got Vice Chair Kurt Olson, Ralph Samuels, Mike Dugan, Scott Kawasaki, and I chair the committee. My name is Vic Coring.
Okay. Thank you. Well, and it is an honor to be able to get both of the committees together here today. And our task is very simple. We want to hear from the public on the proposed natural gas pipeline. In this case, we're looking at Senate Bill 104, House Bill 177. And we have people from a number of LIOs that are standing by. And with that, we will now go to Anchorage to Jerry McCutcheon. Jerry, would you put yourself on the record? Jerry McCutcheon in Anchorage. Can you hear me, Jerry?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can. Please, if you could.
My name is Jerry McCutcheon, M-C, capital C-U-T-C-H-E-O-N. Thank you, Chairman Huggins and Chairman Coring, for the opportunity to speak to your committee today, or your committees today. Had the oil companies constructed the gas line back in the 1980s when they actually wanted to construct the gas line, there would not be a Prudhoe Bay today as we know it. And more than half of the state's revenue would be missing. That omission came out of the Murkowski administration. Prudhoe Bay has produced more than 5 billion barrels more oil than Prudhoe Bay would have produced had the oil companies constructed the gas line back in the 1980s. How could you operate the state of Alaska on less than half of its current revenue? The legislature and the public may want to think about it before you demand a gas line for the same parameters that applied in the 80s still apply today and will continue to apply for another decade, maybe two more, three more decades into the future. It is the decline in gas pressure that is causing the decline in oil recovery. There is more oil to be produced from Prudhoe Bay than has been produced. There's another 15 billion barrels of recoverable oil that nobody really wants to talk about, and the gas is needed to obtain that oil. Prudhoe Bay is gas short and oil long. The gas is not trash to be taken out, but is needed for future oil production. The Mackenzie River gas line costs escalated. It was $5 billion Canadian, and then there was a 50% increase to $7.5 billion, with notice that they expected another 30% increase to $10 billion. But as of Monday, the cost is now $16 billion. Thus, there was another 200% increase in the cost of that gas line. That gas line was the one they used as an analogous example by Pedro Van Meers. So we have a total increase of 300%. That would make the gas line, Elkan gas line, from $20 to $60 billion. The amount of gas, Larry personally, when he was Deputy Commissioner of Revenue, told LBA, Legislative Budget and Audit, in 2004 that the alleged 35 TCF would only sustain the 4.5 billion cubic feet LA Alcan gas line for a little over a decade. The oil companies really needed 60 cubic feet per day. The North Slope does not have the 35 TCF, only 29. The Oil and Gas Conservation Commission said that the other reservoirs, which they had counted in the 35 TCF, are not available because gas withdrawal from them would cause serious loss of oil recovery. Thus, only Prudhoe Bay and Point Thompson are available for gas withdrawal from a gas for a gas line. Premature gas withdrawal for a gas line also applies to Point Thompson. In the case of Prudhoe Bay, gas recycling, the recycling again for oil production, may have to continue for several more decades for oil production to be reasonably complete before gas withdrawal for gas line may begin. In the case of Point Thompson, after the litigation is settled, it will be more than a decade before the production of Point Thompson gas liquids can start. And the gas...
Jerry, if I could, Charlie Huggins, I'm sorry. I did not ask you to limit your testimony to 3 minutes, but I would ask you to wrap up in 30 seconds, and in future testimony be limited to 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. Gas will have to be recycled for as much of a decade to prevent retrograde condensation of the gas liquids and oil condensates worth $15 billion at current market prices before Thompson's gas can be used for a gas line. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you very much, Jerry, and we appreciate your taking the time out of your schedule. And next we'll go to Mr. Paul Laird.
Thank you, Chairman Huggins. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 104 and House Bill 177, the Alaska Gas Line Inducement Act. I'm Paul Laird, L-A-I-R-D, and I'm General Manager and testifying on behalf of the Alaska Support Industry Alliance. We're not ConocoPhillips or BP or ExxonMobil or Anadarko. We're not TransCanada or Enbridge or MidAmerican. We're the companies that provide them with the goods and services that make Alaska's oil, gas, and mining industries possible. And our 400-plus member companies generate more than 30,000 jobs for Alaskans. We understand the importance and the urgency of transforming Alaska's gas production into a gas project. The Alliance is working hard to understand the details and implications of the bill. We're concerned about the $500 million state matching contribution for costs related to acquiring a FERC certificate. It's unnecessary, and it may not be the best use of state funds. We're concerned about any provision that transforms pretenders into contenders, like conceding a licensee without financial backing at the time of certification for additional years to sanction a project. By the administration's timetable for certification, this could delay first gas sales until the early to mid-2020s. The Alliance believes in having a level playing field for all applicants, but we oppose provisions that promote artificial parity among the players. Alaska's interests are best served if the most competitive project is built by the strongest developer. We're concerned that there are no objective criteria for judging, for weighing the relative importance of various elements of the application, assessing the risks associated with each proposal, and making the selection in an open, fair, and transparent manner. We're concerned about any process mandating the state to choose a winner and promote a monopoly at the expense of other prospective developers. Alaska's history is already strewn with the remnants of projects for which the state picked winners. Finally, we're concerned about the $30 to $40 billion question underpinning the entire discussion. If we build it, will they come? Once the state chooses a licensee to build a pipeline, will the producers come to the open season? We believe the bill, as currently drafted, puts too much emphasis on the short-term risks of pipeline builders and does too little to address the long-term risks of shippers. Upstream issues like real long-term tax stability need to be resolved first if Alaska truly wants North Slope producers to commit their gas to a project. The Alaska Gas Line Inducement Act may represent our last and best chance to make a North Slope gas project a reality. We look forward to working with you and with the governor and her team to help transform Alaska's gas into decades of clean, reliable domestic energy for Americans and generations of prosperity for Alaskans. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you, Paul. We appreciate your input. And I think you're there with Jerry. If you would... Jerry, both and all other people that are testifying, if you have written testimony, we'd appreciate if you'd make that available so we could have a complete masterpiece of what you're testifying to. And let the record show that Senator McGuire has joined us. This time we'll go to Mat-Su, Mr. Donald Benson. Hello, Mr. Benson.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Benson. Yes, it's Charlie Huggins in Juneau with both the House and the Senate personnel waiting to hear your testimony on Senate Bill 104, House Bill 177.
Yes, and thank you. We were muted here, and we're in business now. I hope you can hear me.
I can.
Okay, the Honorable Chair Charlie Huggins of the Senate Resources Committee and the Honorable Vic Coring of the House Oil and Gas Committee. My name is Don Benson. I was born and raised in the Matanuska Valley along with my parents and my grandparents were 1935 colonists. I would like to take this moment to encourage the entire legislature to support the governor's natural gas pipeline proposal with the takeoff points that include Alaska cities and villages. The governor's proposal will bring gas to our Alaska homes and businesses. The natural gas is the cleanest and most reliable type of heat. It can be backed with hydroelectric, wind, solar, and whatever else may come along. We had 3 30% increases last year in our gas prices in the valley alone. Not that that price will ever go down, but at least we'll be bringing the gas to here, so we're investing in ourselves. I'm here to ask the legislature to help bring the gas home. We need to invest in the future of Alaska and the United States first, so our children can afford to live here as we have. Let the gas sell itself. Get behind the natural gas. We can't afford not to. Thank you very much for this chance to speak before you.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Benson. We always like to hear from people in Palmer and Mat-Su, and you fulfilled that. Thank you very much. And next, Karen Rhodes.
Hi, Senator Huggins and rest of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm not a person who is armed with statistics and, you know, professional opinion. I'm basically just a constituent who just wants to put in my opinion. My husband and I own a small business in Wasilla, and we invested $500,000 in startup costs for this business. There were no guarantees that our business was going to succeed, but we weighed the pros and cons, and we decided that the potential for success was worth taking the risk. I'm a person who's always believed that risk is the number one factor in success. And in this particular case, I believe the $500 million is a very well-calculated risk based on the potential payback. I believe that it's not only worth the risk, but it's essential to the success of it. I think the state has proven beyond a reasonable doubt that this incentive is critical for getting the gas to market sooner than later. And I think that the potential for financial loss associated with delayed startup is greater than the overall risk being taken by offering the incentive. I also would like to I question people's opinions that the way the state wants to choose the builder and it compares it to the Delta Barley Project, for example, or the Alaska Seafood Institute. And I don't think that comparing this project to other failed state projects is a reasonable thing to do. This is a project that's being demanded of by the nation. There's a great need for this in a national level and not just a state level. And I think that the ability of the state to choose a builder and, you know, create a good contract with the producers, I think that they have the wisdom and the talent on the teams, Governor Palin's teams, in which to make good decisions, and I trust them. I want to express my confidence in their ability to get this thing off the ground and make good decisions. The governor said in her inaugural speech that Alaska needs to take hold of her own destiny. And I believe that this is a step in that direction. And I think that just on the outset that AGIA seems like a good risk and the $500 million is a good risk, and I would like to see the legislature go forward with this plan.
Thank you, Karen. And we appreciate hearing from you and taking the time out of your schedule. Next, we will go to Mat-Su, to Fairbanks, Mr. John Brown.
To the chairs and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify on the Alaska Gas Line Inducement Act. My name is John Brown. I'm representing the operating engineers, Local 302, here in Alaska. Alaska's natural gas has the potential to secure our economic future, and I applaud the governor's efforts to cause a pipeline to be constructed. A project like this comes along once in a generation. We have one chance to get it right. We can and we should do a better job than we did on TAPS. I listened to Legislative Counsel Don Bullock testify yesterday, and I agree with his comments counseling you to include everything the state needs from this project in the bill. So what do we need? As Representative Samuel says, the tariff. We need a low tariff to ensure that the state receives fair compensation for its resource and that independent companies can afford to ship their gas in the pipeline. How do we get a low tariff? One of the ways it's not addressed to the extent possible is to ensure a steady, productive, and predictive cost and supply of labor. By including the requirement for a negotiated project labor agreement in the bill, we can ensure labor stability through a no-strike, no-lockout provision. We can ensure of a competent workforce that's been trained in standardized programs that include both classroom and extensive on-the-job training. The cost of labor will be known because the wages and benefits can be agreed to prior to the start of work, and the use of in-state hiring halls will give Alaskans the best opportunity to get the jobs associated with the gas line. I urge members of the committee to include the requirement for a licensee to commit to negotiate a project labor agreement for construction of the pipeline and all related infrastructure. Again, thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, and thank you, John. We appreciate your testimony. Next, Mr. George Berry in Fairbanks.
Good afternoon to the members of the committee. My name is George Berry. I live at 1480 Southfield Road, Fairbanks, Alaska. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify here with this committee. I'd also like to make known that I signed up to testify on my own behalf here this afternoon, but I am a 30-year member of local Teamsters 959 and have worked on the TAPS oil project for 30 years. Gee, a year goes by pretty quickly. When I was here just shortly over a year ago testifying on the Murkowski legislation, I fully support Governor Palin's AGEA legislation for its overall imaginative approach to get new producers on the slope in the gas development area to help this project along. But with all balanced and productive legislation, a tweak here and there to better address the weak link should be welcomed by you, our representatives. As John before me, I fully support the addition of a project labor agreement for all the same reasons that John pointed out: predictive labor costs throughout the project, the maximum Alaskan hire possible through all the training programs the labor group can bring to the table. After 30 years of working on TAPS, I can fully state that the project labor agreement that was agreed to prior to construction of the oil line was the best benefit to all the Alaskan residents. I want to thank you again for the opportunity here to speak to you, and I'll hope to have the opportunity again before this legislation passes through. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Berry. We appreciate your testimony. Next, Tammy Wilson in Fairbanks.
For letting me testify today. I attended the first meeting with Mr. Irwin at the Lathrop Library to hear their presentation of the AGEA plan. I have also listened to most of the Senate and House presentations. I like the fact that the project winner must commit to a local headquarters in Alaska, but it does not specifically talk about hiring halls and where these halls would be located. In addition, I am very concerned about section number 15 that addresses the actual number of Alaskans to be hired. This part states the project winner will commit to hire qualified residents from throughout the state for management, engineering, and other things, and contract with businesses located in this state to the extent permitted by law. I asked what the number was, and they told me that was zero. So if the actual number is zero, why is this statement even part of the bill? It was also stated that the reason there was no project labor agreement but was that they were looking for workers to not just have jobs, but careers in the oil industry. and they will take care of labor issues later. This was very upsetting to me because I have a husband who retired from the Steelworkers Union after 30 years and a son who just became an apprentice in Operators Union 302. And believe me, he plans on this being his career. Unions are careers. When more questions were asked about placing stronger language to secure that Laskins will be hired, Mr. Irwin told the audience that he heard us and had written it down, and now it was time to get back to the real issues. To those of us in Fairbanks, this is the real issue. When Marsha Davis came here from the Department of Revenue, she said, we have specifically not addressed whether there's a project labor agreement in this structure, and I know that's been an area of concern for many in Fairbanks. And again, our focus is to see what people present to us by way of application, and the strongest applications are going to be the ones that nailed this Alaskan hire. The one thing that we have done in this bill that wasn't done in the other approach was instead of having the owner of the pipeline commit their funds to go do their own job development, this is going to be an Alaskan state control job development, so this is going to be done within our department administration. Money is going to be committed from the state coffers to make sure it's done right and done the way we want it done. This sounds great, but my grandmother taught me that if you want to make sure there are no misunderstandings, then you put it in writing, and that is what I am asking you to do. I wish you could have been here last Tuesday when the room was filled with bright yellow signs asking you to make sure Alaskans are truly the first priority for these jobs. The room today is again filled. There are men and women of all ages to show how important this issue is to this community. Please protect jobs for Alaskans by putting in strong language that lets all those that will submit an application know that if they do not hire Alaskans, they will not be the ones chosen for this project. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Tammy. We appreciate that. Next, Dan Ward in Fairbanks. Hello, Mr. Ward, are you there?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me now?
Yes, please.
Dan Ward, I'm a registered voter in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm here in support of my Union 302, in support of the AGIA, which I think is a very good bill for Alaskans, in 104 and 177, and just to show my support that we do need the pre-labor agreement in that contract for whatever contractor we get to license for that, for the pipeline. I just want to be here to show my support. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you very much, Dan. We appreciate your taking the time out of your schedule. Next, we will go back to Anchorage. Paul Kendall. Paul, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, Paul. If you'd put yourself on the record, we'll hear your testimony.
All right. Paul D. Kendall, Anchorage citizen. I represent no particular group or interest, and I have no conflict of interest, speaking strictly as a citizen. Before I begin, I'd like to thank you gentlemen, and I'd also like to thank the group representing the governor on their frankness, their openness, and it is truly encouraging and inspirational to see men discuss a project of such magnitude and such historical proportion in such an open, honest, endeavoring modality. And in addition to that, I'm envious of you gentlemen who are in a position to play a role in such a historical moment, and my compliments to you, and I hope you represent us, and I'm sure you will in some honorable fashion. What I would like to do, it seems to me as a citizen, it's very difficult to add to the specificity of some of the details because we can't be on all the discussions. So I would like to simply beg large questions, if I might, and I'll just try to run them out as quickly as possible here so that other people can testify. First of all, I remain somewhat convinced in my own mind that we have two separate lines that need to be addressed. We have the Canadian gas line, but whenever you extrapolate that out to 15 years, it puts a tremendous gamble on the outside, knowing that what can happen in the history of mankind to markets and applications and perspectives. So it seems to me we have to also look at another line that has to be a sovereign line leading to the people of Alaska. At the moment, I'm abstaining from the LPG implant at the Valdez location. I'm just suggesting that by the time you look at the gas flow through the big line and the wait for that opportunity and the gamble of that opportunity, betting on the come, that you could have been better off to run a small 6-inch or whatever line it takes to move the gas to Fairbanks at least immediately. The other thing that concerns me here is I don't see the large producers coming to the table in some open, frank manner of partnership that says, look, we love the people of Alaska, we have a history together, and our in-kind gas is most definitely available to you at this time. I just don't see that partnership, and I'm concerned it's because of our government being in June or not being quite yet like they should. I'm going to continue on with a few more. I'm going to read them off very quickly, and please feel free to tell me when my time is up.
Well, you got Paul. Hello, Paul. You have 30 seconds.
Wow. Well, I'll just have to continue to seize the moment to come back at the opportunities. I'll try to squeeze in two more here. First, I hope you'll give the opportunity to any testifier or RFP proposal person to swear themselves in some gauge of testimony. The other is this, that this is very, very important. It is my belief that Alaska should own and control 12.5% of the space and the spherical content of the pipeline. Any pipeline that leaves any field, we should tie that in as an unrelinquished position that we own the space within the pipeline. There's a very specific reason, and this needs to be dialogued out if I haven't seen it. We should not relinquish that right. It should be a proprietary right, and it gives us a multitude of avenues to participate and to authorize and to gauge what is happening, and I hope that's not too vague. And I thank you for the opportunity to participate, and again, I am envious of the role and place in history. There's an old saying that says, we are all where we're supposed to be when we're there, and I'm envious of you gentlemen and ladies and the contribution you're about to make to this huge, huge moment for Alaska, which may draw worldwide attention. I'm not just talking about the pipeline. There's much, much more here following this or connected to this. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Paul. And if you could send us your written testimony, we'd appreciate it. And both Senator McGuire and Senator Green say thank you for recognizing them at the table. Next, we'll go to Mr. David Gottstein in Anchorage.
Thank you, Messrs. Chairman and other members of the committee. My name is David Gottstein, and I co-chair and represent a citizens group by the name of Backbone. I'm here today to strongly encourage you to complete the task of refining and passing AGEA this legislative session. Even though many may think it is not perfect, it is an excellent platform to move forward in marketing Alaska's gas. Most importantly, it offers a competitive framework.